last week during our morning lecture in Goloka Dhamma, I had to speak about that verse, and I found it was very, very practical verse for every devotee, and found it very, very nice. I also found special notes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur on this topic, and I thought today to share this with you. So please, you can read the 7-3. We will just hear the verse first with the purport, and then I will speak about it. So although the translation of the verse is not so easy to get it, the purport is actually the most essential. That's therefore I chose that verse, because Srila Prabhupada is explaining very clearly how this contact with the senses and the body and the sense object and the soul are working. And he's explaining how when the senses, which are actually transcendental by nature, how when they become contaminated or overcome by material energy, how this is making the soul quivering, that's disturbing the inner peace of the soul. So I was reading from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his book on Bhakti Aloka is the title, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave very, very astonishing comments that I would like to share, and they will come a few times during the lecture. Because we hear very often in Srila Prabhupada's book that we should not be engaged in sense gratification. But here we will hear a little bit a different perspective from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which, don't worry, everything goes together, but very interesting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, when the sense objects come to the senses, our senses enjoy. This type of material enjoyment is compulsory, that means required or obligatory, for the embodied soul. Without enjoying the sense objects, a living entity cannot survive. As soon as one gives up sense enjoyment, he leaves his body. Therefore, giving up sense enjoyment can never be applied in practice. And I think we all have experience of that. We all might have read that we should not try to enjoy our senses, but it's just not possible. Our senses are demanding and need to have this enjoyment. Without it, the soul just leaves the body. It's just not possible to live without that. So a little further in Bhakti Aloka, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives an example how one can experience this pleasure through the sense and the sense perception without becoming contaminated by material energy. Because by nature, the senses are in a transcendental plane. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives three very important guidelines for us, and especially, I mean, this every one of us have senses, and it's really very practical and very important for all of us. So he's giving 3 points. The first point is, one should accept sense objects as the Lord's mercy and not in a spirit of enjoyment. That means even though the senses will feel, should I move? No? Yeah? Okay. And here already is a type of nice understanding with Prabhupada's quotation of we should not try to enjoy the senses. Although the senses have this desire to enjoy, we should not try to do it in an enjoyment spirit, but one should remember that actually this sense objects that are given to us by the mercy of the Lord. So when one can do that, while the senses are feeling pleasure, we remember that the sense objects were given by the Lord, then our sense do not become covered by material energy. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, one should accept sense object not too much and not too little. That's the second point. Because he explained, if one take more than necessary, then immediately the mellow for material pleasure will increase. That means material energy comes and covers us. And if we take less than what we are supposed to take, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, the body, which is a means of worshipping Krishna, will not be properly protected.
Sorry.
No problem. So not too much, not too less. When we take too much, then the material mellow increase. When we take too little, this body, which is instrument for worshipping Radha and Krishna, will not be properly protected, or will be deteriorated. So I'm not so well structured. I would like to come back again to the first point. Who remember what was the first point? Yeah, that the sense object are the mercy of Krishna. I just came back from India. I just noticed, actually, I was here one day before flying to India, and I came back a few weeks ago, and I was staying for 1 month, the month of Kartik, in Radhakund, together with few devotees, and according to Shastras, we were the emplacement of our ashram was exactly at Madhu Mangal Kunj. And what was happening there is, although we were doing sadhana and chanting and reading and doing all spiritual activities, I don't know if it was because of Madhu Mangal's influence, but we were all eating a lot of sweets and just could not control ourselves. It was like every day it was very, very difficult to control the senses on this point. And next to, also in our ashram, but the next room was Advaita Prabhu. Maybe you might know him. Very, very nice sadhaka. And time to time he will come and take prasadam in our room. And one day I said, Advaita, what should I do? I feel like I'm young bhakta, I'm just eating so much and so much sweets. What should I do? And Advaita said something very nice. He said, just meditate from where is that food coming. Just meditate that it was offered to this particular deity. Just remember the deity. Remember that this food you are eating is actually prasad. Or, if we follow the point, is actually the mercy of Krishna. And when you realize this, then you will not get so much urge of eating, because you will not be overpowered by the material energy for this enjoyment of senses. So the second point was not to take too much, not to take too less. And the third point, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, one should accept sense objects which are favorable for devotional service only, which is quite clear and quite easy. Yeah, I've printed my notes a little small, and I would like to come back again to the point one. I hope I'm not too strong with you. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, if the senses object are honestly accepted as Krishna's mercy, then yukta viragya is obtained. That means when one can see that all those sense objects are given by Krishna, then we can enter into yukta viragya and use them into proper way in Krishna's service. As soon as we remember they come from Krishna, then we will use them for Krishna. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada explained that we can actually not stop our senses. This is just not possible, but one should engage them properly in the service for Krishna. And he gives a very, very nice example with the mischievous child. Did anyone really try to stop a mischievous child? It's just not possible. But if one engages him properly, then he will be peaceful. And that's actually the point that Srila Prabhupada writes, how we should deal with our senses. We should direct them or connect them in service for Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.1.17, Srila Prabhupada speaks about that. He said, our first concern should be to control the senses. And since the senses cannot be controlled unless engaged in devotional service of the Lord, our most important duty is to engage the senses in devotional service. So this is the conclusion of bhakti, using all our senses and connecting them in service to Krishna. Once I was traveling in England together with my spiritual master Satchinandana Swami, and there we had a retreat, and one devotee was there, his name is Pradyumna. He has an Indian body, but very, very, very nice devotee. Very, very kind. And a person, when he speaks, you can feel he's together with what he's saying. He's very, like he was somehow thanking me for my service, and I just felt so much warmth. I just felt this person is really so much caring for me, and I felt so much moved by his genuineness in his way of expressing himself. And then we were leaving this place. We were in the car, and Guru Maharaj was asking all the devotees, so what was your highlight of the retreat? And then I told him, I was just so moved the way Pradyumna thanked me and how much he was together with his thoughts and his feelings. And Satchinandana Swami said, oh yeah, Pradyumna is the best. Pradyumna is really such a good person. And then he said, we can see many of Indians, many people who were born in India and were raised in this culture could really get into the essence of this etiquette of proper behavior. And then he said, but who I am, and who I am from the West, from Germany, I have so many bad qualities, but what the only things I can do is to just engage everything in Krishna's service. All my so many ideas, so many plans, so many diversion in my mind, but I just know my only chance is to engage all of that in the service of the Lord. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada was also writing how all the senses should be engaged in different ways in connection to Krishna or service to Krishna. We heard about the tongue, which is tasting prasad. Once, when I was young bhakta, and I was like in Radhakund, eating more than necessary, one devotee told me, don't worry so much. It's like if a snake bites you, but the snake do not have any poison. So it's still not good, but you are protected. So when we are eating prasad, we are connecting our senses to Krishna. But when we are aware that this food was personally touched by Krishna's lotus lips, when we are aware this was touched by Krishna, then there is a stronger effect. That means it's not just the senses that are connected to the spiritual sense object, but also our mind. Is there a certain type of awareness? Is there that the Lord had touched this food? And this is very, very nice to try to do this exercise when we are eating prasad. Actually, we should not be supposed to eat prasad. We are supposed to respect prasad or honor prasad. That means as we are eating it, that we remember the deities which has touched personally this prasad. Sometimes devotees come from India and say, I have some prasadam. And we ask, from which deity? Oh, I don't know. I don't remember. Or so the devotees, when they eat the prasad, they always want to remember the deity. They want to be connected. And when they receive prasad, some of them, they close their eyes and they fold their hands and they really respect it and see the deities in their mind and pray, may this prasad just purify myself, just clean myself totally. This is the way we are supposed to use our tongue in respecting prasad. Our ears are like a big cups, ready to receive the sound of Krishna's holy name, ready to receive the sound of the glories of Lord Krishna. Like we see the cows in India, they have big ears, and when there are some pleasing sound, they just turn their ears. So that's how we should turn our ears to the katha of Krishna, to the glories of Krishna, and to the holy name. And when we do this exercise and we become purified, then we become addicted. Then we just cannot hear anything else. When we hear politics, when we hear criticizing, you just feel like running away. You just cannot hear that anymore. That's the sign our ears, our senses had become purified. But when the holy name is chanted, we just feel more, I want more. You are in a kirtan and you just pray, Krishna, please don't allow the singer to stop. Please don't allow him to stop. I want to hear. I want to hear more. That should be our hopes. That should be our desire, to come to this state of purity, that we just don't get any attraction, any desire for mundane sound vibration, but just so much desire and attraction for the holy name, for the glories of Krishna. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada brings it also to a very interesting point. He's bringing us to Bhagavad Gita 2.59. Vishaya vinivartante. I really thought I should learn at least one verse of Bhagavad Gita, but alone I can do it, but I'm a little in front of everyone, I cannot do it, sorry. But I have at least the meaning of the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense object remains. But seizing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So this is a very, very important verse where Prabhupada said, unless one gets this higher taste, then it's not possible to really control the senses. One may try to restrict them, but still the taste for enjoyment is there. And Srila Prabhupada, in that particular verse in Bhagavad Gita, give a very interesting example of a person who has a disease. And this person is forbidden to eat a certain type of food. So, first of all, he doesn't like it to be forbidden. And second of all, the taste for this particular food is still in him. So it's not really an easy situation. But only, Prabhupada writes further in this purport in Bhagavad Gita, one who has tasted the beauty of Krishna no longer like death material things. Very, very nice. As I was traveling with my spiritual master for years, I was worshipping his deities, Shishirada Kanaya Lal, and they are very, very beautiful, very, very fine. And sometimes I will worship the deities and then bring the deities to him, and he will be chanting in front of them. And sometimes he will look at me and say, they will conquer us by their beauty. Their beauty will attract us. And this, again, here we come in contact with our sense of vision, huh? The eyes and the deity. How much careful are we looking at the deity? Huh? Sometimes we come to take darshan, puff, puff, up, Hare Krishna, and we go and do other things. Huh? How much, when we come to take darshan, are we looking at the deities? There, when I was not yet in Krishna consciousness, I had a book about meditation. And there was a technique which we have heard also in our Krishna conscious movement. You look the feet of the deity, then you go up and you look everything, every single decoration, every single thing, until you come to the top of the peacock feather. And then from there you go down again. And from down you go up again. And you just keep your eyes in full contact with the deities. And when you do that, it's just like moving. You just feel the connection is established. You just feel I'm there with the deities. So I would like to speak a little bit about Krishna's beauty and our hopes to be attracted by Krishna's beauty. I would like to read one quotation from Bilva Mangala Thakur. He was very, very advanced soul, very, very pure devotee. And now he is conquered by the beauty of Krishna, and he don't know what to do anymore. He said, "What should I do for Krishna, who is pleasing beyond all pleasurable conceptions, and who is naughtier than all restless boys? The idea of Krishna's beautiful activities is as attracting my heart, and I do not know what I can do." I have another quote about Krishna's beauty. "Krishna's youth is the reservoir of all pleasure and is the time when the highest variety of devotional service are exchanged. The force of Krishna's youth was combined with his beautiful smile. He was always nicely dressed, in beauty surpassing Cupid. Krishna was attracting the mind of the gopis, who were thereby always feeling pleasure." So now I would like to make the lecture a little bit interactive. I would like that all of us here say something about Krishna's beauty. I think we all have heard about Krishna a lot. And what is Krishna's beauty? What, anyone can say something about Krishna's beauty? Yeah, Mikhail?
Krishna's smile is very beautiful.
Okay. There is even a song, Madhura, Madhura, Madhura. His smile is beautiful. His eyes are beautiful. Yeah, yes, Sudharani.
His eyes are beautiful.
Wow. Does the eyes and the navel look similar to something? Lotus? Lotus petals. Thank you. Anyone else? Damodar Priya? Oh, wow. That's extremely beautiful. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said that Krishna has so much sweetness that the weight of this sweetness forced him to bend in three places. Who else knows anything about Krishna's beauty?
Restless eyes.
Very nice. they are compared sometimes to a bird, huh? Kanchana bird who is going very fast.
It has very beautiful fingers.
Oh.
Everywhere, and the feet also.
Hmm.
It's really interesting to look at his feet because every Krishna deity has different kind of lotus feet. And sometimes the middle finger is bigger than the bigger finger.
Wow.
And I don't know how to explain it. It's like he is, in this temple, he is the Lord, you know. And sometimes Radharani is more sweeter than Krishna, and then one can see that she's, because of her beauty, that Krishna is a little bit more in the back. Like Krishna, it's just that, yes, I'm, you know, I, how to say, I give up, you know, and just because of her beauty, you know, and she is like shining, his beauty actually.
Mm. Very nice. That's a person who look at the deity very carefully. Can see, oh, this deity has a bigger toe. Krishna has a toe a little bit bigger than the other deity. And also to see the different moods of the deity. Also for some of us who live in temples, when we see every day the same deity, we can see of different moods, how the deity is in different moods. Anyone else about beauty? Yeah?
It's nice hands on playing flute like this.
Yeah, very beautiful fingers on the flute.
Yeah, yeah. And we know that Krishna's skin is very, very soft. That even if a leaf falls on the skin, it let a mark. But when Krishna plays flute, the finger, the place where he touched the flute is a little bit harder. So that it doesn't make any mark or anything. One devotee was telling me, we had a discussion about Krishna's lotus feet, and one devotee was telling me Krishna's lotus feet do not have hard skin. Anyone knows about the Srivatsa sign of Krishna? Srivatsa? Sign? Isn't it that very beautiful? It's a line of hairs which make like a spiral, and that's somewhere on the left or right side of the chest. And Krishna's skin is very blackish, and those hairs are grey whitish. This is also very, very beautiful. I should be able to hear from all of you something about Krishna's beauty. Who else can say something?
Of Krishna.
Okay.
There is one deity in Colombia, I mean, named Ratanatabara. This is really incredible. I never seen like this, something like this.
Very nice.
He's very above the Pitamber.
Oh, yeah?
Pitamber.
Very nice. Yeah, yeah. Pitambara is the chador, huh? That he has. There is a beautiful description when Krishna was entering the town of Mathura, then was Kubja, and there is the old Leela with Kubja, and Krishna was asking Kubja to please give me this sandalwood paste. Kubja had a big trail with many different type of sandalwood paste with different color and different smells, and I mean, I don't want now to start to deviate from Krishna's beauty, but Krishna said, please give it to me. And this was meant for Kamsa. And everyone was looking what was going on. So Krishna was asking, please give me this sandalwood paste. He was actually saying, please give me your life. Because she could have been killed by giving what was meant for Kamsa to him. And finally, Kubja did not care. She wanted to give herself to Krishna, and then she moved the Pitambara of Krishna away, and from the navel up to the head, she was decorating Krishna with the sandalwood paste. And she would make very, very beautiful design. It was not like us, we have a flower and, you know, she was doing that with a lot of aesthetic. She would take her left hand and Krishna would place his head on the hand, and with the right she would paint on his face. Anyone else about Krishna's beauty?
Says that Krishna's lips are red like bimba fruit.
Oh.
And it also Krishna is called Mukunda. It means the giver of liberation, but it also means the one who smiles like a Kunda flower.
Wow.
So he smiles like a Kunda flower. And also I read somewhere that his nose is like a sesame flower.
Mm.
I don't know what it looks like, but it's compared to a sesame flower.
Wow. Very nice. His eyes are also reddish, huh? Krishna's eyes are also reddish. And he's eating pan. He's eating betel, and also that color, the mouth. You can see Radheshyam in Vrindavan, can see very well the redness in the eyes of Krishna. Very nice, Mataji. Thank you. Yeah? Mm. Something?
The color of his skin.
Yeah.
It's very dark. Mm. Yeah, it's like a monsoon cloud, but I think we don't understand why is a monsoon cloud so beautiful. Mm. For us, oh, rain, no, not again. But for the Indians, it's auspicious to see the monsoon after the dry period. They see everything nice into the cloud. I don't know.
And when Krishna comes back in the evening from the pasturing ground, his body is covered with dust, the dust from the cows. And this must also give a little more a gray color to the deep black of Krishna. And when Krishna entered the arena of King Kamsa to fight with Chanur and Mustika, his body was decorated, was even beautified with drops of blood from the elephant Kuvalayapit. And something also very, very interesting, the jewels or all ornamentations that are put on Krishna's body, they are actually becoming more beautiful because of Krishna. We have in Golokadam some of the ornamentations that we use for Radha Madan Mohan, which are very, very old. And when you see them in the drawer, you feel, oh no, this I could not put on the deities. But when the deities wear those ornaments, then it looks very beautiful.
I made a garland and then it's not beautiful, but in the next day when the baby has a garland on, then it looks always beautiful.
But is it more blue or more black? Because sometimes I read this is more blue and sometimes black, then I don't know what.
This
is very difficult for me to understand what, because sometimes I read this is complete black and then blue and then blue and black, but more touch of blue.
And sometimes blue with a little more touch of black.
I would put this in one corner, but I cannot.
I know that once there was a picture that had been given to Srila Prabhupada, a picture of Krishna. And Krishna said, Prabhupada said, he's very, very beautiful. But when we will be in front of Krishna, you will see he looks very different.
Yeah.
I think this is only when revelation comes to you, you will see exactly his color. Yeah. I thought it's nice that we have a little bit interactive and that we all engage our mind in thinking of this beauty of Krishna, because we came to this point because Prabhupada was saying when we become attracted by the beauty of Krishna, then this higher taste will be there, and then we don't get this attachment or this attraction for mundane material things. So this spiritual taste, I think all of us, we have received it in some times of our spiritual life. Sometimes we get a lot of them in the beginning of our spiritual life, because Krishna wants to give us signs. Yeah, you are on the right, you are on the right path. Continue like this, continue like that. And sometimes in our life we get again this spiritual taste. It's something very, very difficult to describe. It's a type of sweetness, a type of softness that is felt in us. And this is actually what is giving us strength to go on. We should be looking for this spiritual taste. We should be craving for it. We should be longing for this spiritual taste, because this is what will save us. This is what will attract us toward Krishna. We should remember when I had this taste. How was it? How did that taste come? Did I do something special or not? And hope that this taste come back. And we see, in spiritual life we are going up and down. Sometimes this spiritual taste is there, sometimes it's not there. But we should be longing, we should be craving for this spiritual taste to be there. One devotee told me one day, all those spiritual experiences that were moving your heart, you should take them and you should string them like you make a flower garland with all those spiritual experiences. And then you put this flower garland around your neck and never take it off. That means you always remain aware of those spiritual experiences, of those moments when you had this spiritual taste, that you never forget those moments and always inquire and look for it. This is our chance. Without experiencing this deep taste of spiritual life, it's very, very difficult to counteract the taste of material nature. So I think it's very nice after the lecture or sometimes that you might take a little moment to reflect, when was it last time I got this strong spiritual taste? And just come to the point, I need it, I need to pray for it. So often we are practicing devotional service like a robot. Huh? Like we know I should do like this, I should do like that. Okay, now japa, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. After japa, I read, and then I do this, I do that. But how often do we actually experience Krishna consciousness in our activities? How often do we feel the spiritual taste while we are chanting or reading? I don't know for you, but for me it's not so often. And this show me I should be longing for that. I should be begging for that, because that's my hope. Without this spiritual taste, how will I be able to go toward Krishna? I will just remain in this material world. I need this. It's a must in our spiritual life to get this higher taste. We have to try everything we can, beg from all the devotees, their blessings, so that we can get this spiritual taste. We should not just continue our practice and think, yeah, everything is okay if I don't have this taste. We should really become aware that we need that. We cannot live without this taste. So I would like to read the last sentence that Prabhupada had in the purport, which is very, very beautiful. Our activities Our activities must be so transcendentally saturated. Saturated means soaked in. like or impregnate by. That means all our activity should be like totally soaked in transcendence. And then the Lord will be kind enough to look upon us favorably and engage us in his transcendental service. Then only our sense will be forever satisfied. I like to just underline the point I already made in the middle of the lecture. When we are not just connecting our senses to the spiritual energy, but our mind is also there, and we are aware of what we are actually doing. We are aware that we are dealing with Krishna. At that time, we have this chance of becoming, of our activities to become transcendentally absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So that's what I have prepared for today. Do you have any questions or any comments? Yeah.
There was one quotation, I don't know who said this, but it was like Krishna has his beauty, and because of this beauty, we are losing the taste for material dead things. So
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What was meant by this?
It's so beautiful, I think it's good to read it again. One who has tasted the beauty of Krishna no longer like death, material things.
Mm-hmm.
All those things which have no life. So what is the question?
I understand the meaning, the actual meaning.
Mm. Actually, it's connected to this higher taste, because Krishna's beauty is something very, very attractive, and when we can appreciate that, when we can be in contact with that, then automatically, when we are in the higher taste, then automatically the other things which are death, like the carpet or things like this, they just don't become, they just lose their meaning or their attraction over us.
When they have no connection to Krishna. But maybe yeah. When they have connection to Krishna, then we can see another
yeah,
life.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Okay.
And there you come to this first point, that one can enjoy the senses, that the senses need enjoyment, but you see that actually all those sense objects that are given for our enjoyment, they are actually given by the Lord. They are actually coming from him, and then it's not contaminating or not polluting ourselves. We are protected against the material energy. I'm hesitating. Should I say it or not? But I think I should say it. We have still few minutes, huh? Do we have for few minutes more? I thought to give you a little gift that I have received when I was in India, and this is a gift in the form of a pastime of Lord Krishna, which was very, very nice. This is the pastimes that happened in Kushum Sarovar. Who of you went, visited Kushum Sarovar? So less. Who of you visited Govardhan Hill? Yeah, same number. Oh, wow, so less. You should visit. So this is a very, very beautiful place. And the pastimes that we hear now is happening in the late morning, around 11 o'clock. There is... Before the month of Kartik, there is a festival, the Sanji festival in India, or in this area of Braj. And this Sanji festival is that everyone decorate their house with some cow dung and some flowers. So on that day, Srimati Radharani and her friend decided to go and pick a flower for decorating their house. But they noticed that in Varshana, all the flowers had been picked already. Do we have some time limit? I thought like, oops, maybe I should stop. Okay. So they noticed that there were no flowers anymore in Varshana, and they decided to come to this place, to Kushum Sarovar, where there are a lot of flowers. Now when the cowherd boys heard that all the gopis were going to Kushum Sarovar, they came to Krishna, and they said, "Hey Krishna, all the gopis are going there. Let's go there and let's make some trick to them, some fun." But Krishna said, "Today I don't feel so well. Today I'm not so good. You go without me. Today I don't think I will move." But the boys, they thought, without Krishna there is not enough fun to play with the gopis. We will go and go with the cows somewhere else. So Krishna looked at the cowherd boy leaving Nandagram with the cows, and Krishna smiled. And Krishna took very strange cloth and a false mustache and left for Kushum Sarovar. So the gopis arrived in Kushum Sarovar and were there starting to pick up flowers. And Srimati Radharani was in a corner. There were a lot of torn bush, like now in Vrindavan. And as she was picking roses, suddenly a thorn took her sari, and then she moved around at another thorn and another thorn, and she became like paralyzed in the thorns, and she called for help. And suddenly a stranger came toward her, and she was just amazed by the beauty of that person. She did not know that person, but she was just so attracted. And that person came and just unhooked her sari, and they were looking in each other's eyes. And Radharani could not say anything, nor this person. And then Radharani slowly stepped back, until suddenly the branches were coming in between the two eyes. And at that time, the gopis who had heard Radharani calling for help arrive and say, "Hey, Radhe, where are your flowers? What did you do?" And Radharani just could say very, very softly, "I was taken in a torn bush, and a person came and unhooked my sari, and he unhooked my heart," and she fainted. The gopis are thinking,